dumb.
Dumb, dumb.
No, I'm dumb. And
oh, I didn't know
it.
We were starting.
Have you ever even listened to the song?
All right.
My God.
Let's do a practice run.
Oh, we're in the show now. It's done. The moment has passed.
I didn't think that we were doing it yet. I thought you were just like saying, dumb, dumb, here we go.
Well, actually, I was just going to kind of blindside you with it. And then like 30 seconds before we started recording, Danielle was like, hey, you know how we should start the show? And I was like, ah, crap. We thought too much alike.
and then I went and messed it up.
Yeah. So here we are today to talk about Sly Fox. And I'm really excited in particular for this episode because there is not a wealth of information about Sly Fox.
No. And we're going to make it all up.
I had a great time researching this episode because I learned a lot about them that I did not know. And I kind of hope now that when people are like Googling Sly Fox, they can find this episode and finally some people will be talking about this group.
How many people do you think actually Google Sly Fox?
Well, I can think of two people who probably do regularly.
Well, we did. They probably was Google was like, why is everybody...
Oh, no, I was thinking the two guys in Sly Fox.
Sorry, Sly Fox guys, if you're listening. Thank you for listening.
Their names are Gary and Michael, but we're going to get to that.
Yeah.
The Genesis story of Sly Fox is really cool. I'd never heard this story, didn't know anything about it, had never seen any of this information, and of all companies to pull through and help me with my research on this episode, Red Bull. Can you imagine?
Red Bull?
Yes, Red Bull. Red Bull did a very, very solid and lengthy interview with Ted Currier last year.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And Ted Currier is the producer who put Sly Fox together.
I got on his LinkedIn. I remember seeing something about Red Bull. It would be amazed, like, researching stuff for the show, how many of these, like, weird producer dudes have LinkedIns. And really? They, like, have, like, real jobs. And then they're, like, projects. Like, oh, yeah, I did this thing in, like, 1984. That's fine.
But yeah, anyway, and I'm like, no, that thing was, like, awesome. And I want to talk about that all the time.
They don't. They want money, yeah, Max.
That's why they don't want to be on the show.
Exactly.
Well, we haven't asked them, just to clarify. If you're a weird producer dude who's put together an act like Sly Fox and would like to be on Offbeat Tracks, please contact us. We're on Twitter at Offbeat Tracks.
Yes, please. That would be a really cool time.
And our email address is on our website, which is offbeattrackscast.com.
Yeah. We're very nice people. We'll talk to you and ask you good questions.
We will. I mean, we already had one dude reach out and he had a great experience. He loves us now. So
yeah.
File 13, what up? So let's talk about Ted Currier. First of all, this is a great example of why you should never fall into the Wikipedia trap, because the Wikipedia page for Sly Fox says that Ted Currier was British. Ted Currier is not British. He's from Maine. And he was a DJ in New York City, and he was like a club DJ. Like this, when he was like, I think in his early 20s, we're talking late 1970s, he would like go to disco clubs and watch guys DJ. He was telling Red Bull all about this, and he was just so fascinated with how they flawlessly mixed the songs together. So he bought turntables. He started practicing doing this. He said he was already buying like 20 45s a week. So he started buying duplicates of them, and he started practicing like mixing the songs and making them flow with his turntables. Mm-hmm. So this leads to a gig working for a radio station in New York, a WKTU, which had rebranded themselves Disco 92. And they actually gave him a platform to do club mixing on the radio.
That's so cool.
And this no one had done this before. I mean, this was such a new thing. And it's funny, the mixing club mix on the radio would become really big in Miami, which ended up being the genesis of Sly Fox. But he was kind of the guy that did this first, and it was in New York. And so he got really, really good at the transitioning thing, and that was what he was known for. But he, unfortunately, was, like, making no money working at this radio station.
Yeah.
So he leaves this radio station, like, despite being a very well-known person with a very successful show, he leaves the station, and they, according to him, within 2 weeks, he gets hired in the A&R department at Capitol Records.
Nice.
Also to note, during this time, by the way, he was friends with another guy who started doing this, kind of doing the same thing, and they sort of had a friendly rivalry over at Kiss FM. Do you know who that was?
I don't know. I could guess one of the like Rick D's in the Weekly Top 40.
No, think more a guy who went on to become a really, really good remixer.
Girl Talk. I'm sorry, no. I hate Girl Talk.
Yeah.
Jelly Bean?
No, not Jelly Bean, but you're warm.
Warm on Jelly
Somebody
Bean.
Who also worked with Madonna and remixed a lot of her stuff.
Why am I blinking?
Shep Pettibone.
Oh, Pettibone.
Yeah.
Wow.
So they were buddies.
I wonder who won that rivalry in the end.
Disputable. Well, because Shep Pettibone did work with Madonna, but, you know, Ted Courier made Sly Fox, so.
This is, yeah. At least once, it was nice.
So, this is really fascinating. He got into his gig doing A&R at Capitol Records, and they basically would not let him do anything. He was coming to them with ideas, and he was getting stamped down, and he thought he was being bullied by a superior. So this is the exact quote. I'm going to read you this verbatim quote. He says, "I had also heard through the grapevine at Capitol that my head of promotion was not going to promote any of my records. Apparently, he had wanted the A&R job that I got, and I was considered an outsider. And I was facing the prospect of losing my job because no matter how good my signing was, it wasn't going to see the light of day if I was going to believe the rumor. So I needed an artist that had a sales base."
Wow.
So this led to him co-producing one of the most iconic mm-hmm. songs of all time.
That's a P-Funk, George Clinton, Atomic Dog.
You got it.
Yep.
And I'm bringing this up for a reason, because do you know the Sly Fox connection here? There is a connection here.
Oh, Mudbone. Wasn't, yes. I'm sorry, there's a guy named Mudbone in this band. Yes. He was in P-Funk, well, one of the 80 million members of P-Funk. I don't know how they ever made money.
Yes. So after, we're talking like 2 years after Atomic Dog has come out, Ted Courier has this idea where he wants to put together a boy band, basically. A boy duo, if you will. So he taps Gary Cooper, Mudbone, and Gary Scheider. And Gary Scheider was George Clinton's, like, right-hand man. Mm. He was in P-Funk All-Stars as well. And George Clinton got mad and would not let Ted Courier have the other Gary. Have Ooh, Gary Scheider.
You don't piss off George Clinton and get away with it.
So it is because of George Clinton that Michael Camacho ended up the other guy in Sly Fox.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
That's a really cool story. this is from the Red Bull interview?
Yeah, all this is from the Red Bull interview.
Why did they even interview him?
We're going to link the interview on our website for this episode, by the way, because it's crazy. You got to read this. I mean, this is such an interesting guy. But this was my favorite quote from the whole interview. I got one more quote from him here where he talks about how he found Michael Camacho, who was the other guy in Sly Fox. He got the idea instead to rebrand the group as a white guy and a black guy because he said there was no such duo and he wanted to make that happen. Mm. So,
okay. All right.
His exact quote was, "The white guy was a guy who I had heard about who was doing Levi's commercials, and I checked him out, and he was down for the concept."
Wasn't he like, he was Latino, wasn't he?
They all keep calling him the white guy.
And I mean, I guess he's white enough.
Everybody, I mean, I guess white Latino. I mean, that's a thing.
I guess.
Spanish origin? I don't know. Mm. Anyway, yes.
Close enough.
So yeah, there you go. So then we had...
The white guy was a guy doing Levi's commercials.
I mean, like, can you think of anything more 80s than that?
The 80s, particularly the bands that we touch on in the show, are very accidentally bands. There's like no real like good way of like, oh, this band just kind of, you know, they really worked very hard in the club and, you know, years and years of really working it. And it's like, you know what? This guy was doing Levi's commercials. I need a white guy who's not really white. He worked.
Yeah, he was white enough.
White enough. Gary.
#Gary, white enough. Get it started.
Gary White Enough Camacho.
Gary White Enough. No, Michael. Michael White Enough Camacho.
Michael White Enough
Camacho. Mudbone and White Enough. That was their stage.
Mudbone and White Enough. Also, let's just point out that Mudbone is begging for a filthy joke.
It is.
It's begging.
But you know what? We're not going to go
We're
there.
Not going to make it. You make it at home, folks. We're above that.
Insert
here.
Insert Mudbone joke here. So, Gary Mudbone Cooper... Michael White Enough Camacho mm-hmm. was not his actual stage name. We just made that up. These are the two dudes in Sly Fox. As you mentioned, Mudbone had been a member of the P-Funk All-Stars. He was mm-hmm. in Bootsy's Rubber Band, and he was in Parliament also.
Yeah.
He was an instrumentalist. He was a percussionist. He was a singer.
He was an all-around Mudbone.
He was. He was a mud boner.
He's a versatile Mudbone.
Sly Fox gets put into the studio working with Ted Courier. He produces the whole thing. Album drops in 1985, December of 1985, right at the end of the year.
Yep.
And the now legendary, in our minds, first single,
of Dum course. Dum
Dum. Dee Dee Dee
Dee. Dum Dum.
Dee 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 Dee.
Dum Dum.
Dee Dee Dee. It's just so good.
Yeah, I know.
So Let's Go All the Way comes out in mm-hmm. December of 1985, right alongside the album. Looking for a new star to put you in the trash. Let's go all the way. Let's go all the way. Yeah, 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 yeah. Let's go all the way. I always describe the overall like sheen of this album, but this song especially, as Miami pop.
Oh yeah, like this. There's one other song on that album that's kind of cool in Miami pop, but Let's Go All the Way is like a crazy meld of everything. It's insane, this song. Like, that's, I actually read something where they were saying one of the reasons why this song probably hit it so big so quickly was that it kind of covered so many genres.
I totally agree.
It was
agree.
On radio everywhere.
I totally agree.
Yeah, it wasn't stuck on, it wasn't stuck in the club, it wasn't stuck on pop radio, it could go on rock radio.
And it definitely was not a stranger to hip hop radio at the time either.
Exactly.
So yeah, it is. It's just, it's a very hard to pin down the genre of the song, so that's kind of why I thought Miami pop seemed appropriate, because it does. I think it's very indicative of like things that were going on in Miami at the time. And we also have to talk about the music video to this song.
Oh yeah.
Because I'm going to say that I think it was a few years ahead of its time.
I think it was. If there was a silly video effect you could put on people, they were using it,
sure.
All of them. Get a little negative.
Yeah,
bright.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking more to the thematics of like having the two kids who were like them as children.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they're like sitting like helicopters and bazookas on this anvil, and they're like smashing them with hammers. It was just, it feels very like early 90s, like we're all one people, all one love kind of thing, like heal the world.
We're all one people, but we're all still in the Cold War.
Right.
So we're always thinking about destruction at every moment.
Exactly.
Love that about the 80s.
Exactly.
Everything is so bright and fun and full of colors, but also we could blow up at any moment.
That's
because
right.
Of the Russians. It's a very silly time.
Ted Currier also noted in this interview, by the way, that the beat from Let's Go All the Way was a definite nod to Atomic Dog.
Oh, okay. I can see that.
Because he says that on Atomic Dog, he figured out how to work with backwards playing elements. So he made a beat for Let's Go All the Way that works backwards and forwards.
That is really cool.
So that's where those like reversing sounds come from, because they probably produced the beat in forwards and then you were hearing it backwards on the track.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
That is really awesome. But yeah, this song is, I read something about this song. They're like, yeah, it's a song about like all of the problems of the universe and, you know, all of these things we're dealing with in the world. I really don't think these lyrics mean anything. like
yeah, in true 80s fashion.
They don't mean anything. Also, the Let's Go All the Way, whether it's about sex or not.
Yeah.
Taken about sex.
I could not find any sources cited for the idea that Ted Currier wanted these guys to be like a wholesome boy band.
Yeah, I read that. I don't know how he would have marketed that. I don't think...
He never mentioned it in the interview, but I mean, I don't think this song is overtly sexual.
No, not at all. I don't think so.
I mean, the lyrics, other than the title of the song, are not really sexual. They're just kind of like... Hey, whatever you want in life, go out and do it and be the best at it.
Go all the way.
Exactly. Don't half-ass two things, whole-ass one thing, to quote, what's his name? Ron Swanson.
So, I never watched that show.
Well, yeah, there you go. You mentioned earlier there was another song you would describe as solid Miami pop on the album, and I'm guessing...
Como tu te llama, which is, I'm just going to curse from my notes here, a goddamn fucking jam.
It is.
That's all I wrote about it, because that's all you need to know. It's awesome.
It is awesome. And it, to be honest, it may as well be like the only other song on this album.
Yeah. Yeah, the rest of this album is like...
But yeah, Como Tú Te Llamas is A+.
Oh, I love that song. If you cannot dance to that song, then you can't dance.
It's
and why are you listening to the show?
Right. I think it's the closest they come to the freestyle genre that was... really starting to get big around that time. You know, we're a couple years from Planet Rock at this point, and freestyle is kind of coming into full swing. So Como Tú Te Llamas is pretty close to being a straight-up freestyle song.
Yeah, it's totally awesome. I want to listen to it all day. Put, like, 4 clips of this song in. Can you do that? No.
Yeah.
It's great. I just feel so strange when I see your face. Como tú te llamas, como tú te llamas, tell me what's your name, como tú te llamas.
Let's Go All the Way, of course, was a huge hit, number 7 in the United States, number 3 in the UK. It charted very well over there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Como tú te llamas did nothing. Did not chart.
Nope. It wasn't even, it was like the last single, I think, from the album.
No, believe it or not, there were actually two more. Can you believe they squeezed?
Well, I think like, no, it was like not even the second or the third single. It was like the last single they released from the album. I mean, somehow.
Can you imagine they squeaked four singles?
And the two songs they put before Como Tu Te Llamas is like, why?
Stay True was the third single off the album.
Mm-hmm.
And this, believe it or not, actually did chart number 94.
Must have been a slow week.
Yeah. I mean, strange things happen, but yeah. Stay True charted. And again, like, can you even remember right now what this song sounds like?
Nope.
I listened to it 2 hours ago, and I got nothing.
Yeah, I probably listened to it probably about 2 hours ago, and...
Nothing.
Nope.
It's, yeah.
It's pretty much...
Not even worth
every
saying.
Song on this album, except for... there's another one that is just, like, maybe the worst song ever made. I'm sorry... Everyone involved with Sly Fox.
Let's remind everyone what Stay True sounds like first, and then we can just get there.
Okay. It's not terrible. I wanna love you, my baby. Gonna do it your way. I wanna show you, my darling, and then I'm gonna change my way. Good to have you back to spend my every day. So believe me, all I wanna do is stay true. Dear girl, don't let me go, cause I never meant to stray. Never thought that there's a really bad song on this album, and I don't know how it ended up.
Oh, bad.
Up.
I thought we meant bad, like, yeah, like, that's a bad song.
No, I mean, like...
A really bad song.
What is this? That is Won't Let You Go, parentheses, wedding song.
Yeah, what in the world was that?
Okay, like, we've talked on the show before, like, 80s albums will have, like...
There's always a ballad.
And you're like, what the hell is this?
Yes.
This is the Sly Fox one.
Yeah.
I don't know if they were trying to
this
like...
This is your one song that you hate.
It was no, you know, they never released it as a single. I don't know if their thing was by wedding song, which I don't get like wedding song from it. They maybe want to like start a thing like, this is what everyone will slow dance to.
I mean, think about it. Like Always by Atlantic Star was out around this time. So maybe they were trying to cash in on that, you know?
But that was a good song. That was the problem.
That's a beautiful song. But you're right, this not so much. I thought, like, when I had this album on and I was listening to it, I thought that I had somehow snuck a song from another album in there accidentally.
Exactly.
And I came up and I was like, what is this?
Maybe that was like the teeny bopper thing they were going for at the beginning. And they were just going to have like a nice rounded, here's your ballad from the teen group.
Yeah, it's a
no,
definite,
they're not teens. I'm pretty sure they were old dudes at this
point. Definite. Oh, yeah. It's a definite sore thumb.
Yeah, it's a. It does not mesh well, but yeah, I can. Yeah, that song does. It's bad. If you grasp, I don't know. Just then I wake, babe, while still asleep, babe. I'm so confused. I won't let you go. How I just don't know. When I know it's just a dream. So there was one more single released off this album,
Don't Play With Fire. It's mm-hmm. the second song on the album, and was the last single that Sly Fox would ever release. A tear.
Sad. Pour one out.
I think, I mean, maybe a bit more memorable than the others. Like, I can remember what Don't Play With Fire sounds like sitting here, unlike Stay True. But again, just not super memorable.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, this is one of those true, in a way, one-hit wonders, even though that one song did chart. I think Don't Play With Fire technically charted, too. I don't think it charted high. I don't know. You might want to look that up.
Doing research now.
I think it technically charted, but I... Nope. Just kidding, it didn't chart. It sucked. Sorry, Sly Fox. They're a true one-hit wonder. Like, they have Let's Go All the Way, and then they just disappear.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think having a number 94 single on the Hot
100
does not count as a follow-up
hit. That does not count. And I also think your definition of one-hit wonder is also how big was your hit. Because, I mean, if you have a massive hit that's everywhere, and then you come up with, like, a song that's getting decent radio airplay, but, you know.
Or just a song, or a song that everyone knows for some other cultural reason, be it not charting. I mean, I always take the 90s group OMC as a, I mean, everybody knows the song How Bizarre if you lived in the 90s.
Yeah.
That song never charted, so they technically are a zero-hit wonder. But
that song never charted?
No, because it didn't get a proper commercial release, and the Billboard rules at the time prevented it.
Because
it was not ever put out on a physical
single. That was like the hugest song.
It was. But it charted like number one on the Airplay chart, but they were never on the Hot 100.
Okay, that makes sense. I mean, in a lot of ways, the way I like to define one-hit wonders, too, is what happened after them. Like, did they stay in the limelight? You know, do you know what happened to them? OMC, no one knows what happened to them. Sly Fox, we have to get Red Bull to talk to them.
That's right.
A couple decades later.
The guy who made them.
Yeah, I mean, it's their...
Let's talk about that. What are they up to now? So, Camacho...
Is he still doing his Levi's ass?
Michael just white enough Camacho. No, he's actually singing jazz now. He released a jazz album in 2008.
Oh, yeah, I did read that.
That was called Just For You. I found a hilarious review of this album by a jazz authority. So you can imagine, like, what this guy's been listening to his whole life and to dig into Michael Camacho's musical past and find Sly Fox. So here's the exact quote. The first line in his review of Michael Camacho's album is, "Back in the mid-80s, a vocal duo with the unfortunate moniker Sly Fox burned briefly bright with the funk-fueled million-seller Let's Go All the Way. Since then, Michael Camacho has emerged from Sly Fox's ashes, revitalized as a top-drawer jazz crooner." And I was just reading that how I assume this dude talks.
It's growing in the street, right up through the concrete, but soft and sweet, and dreaming.
Was Sly Fox an unfortunate name?
I don't think so. Apparently, if you're like an authority on jazz, it is.
Apparently. Is that like a jazz joke?
Here's something I didn't get.
Is that a yaz yoke?
Yes. Was one of them supposed to be Sly and the other one Fox?
Oh.
That crossed my mind, but I don't know. I mean, I guess I could see it being a thing.
I don't know. I've just never really thought about it that much. I have a feeling probably they didn't think about it that much, too. Unfortunate name.
Probably not.
Is it just unfortunate because it was a one-hit wonder? So you're always going to be associated with it if you're white enough Camacho?
I guess so. I mean, it was the one time he charted on the Hot 100, so it's worth sticking around.
I would be pretty happy about that.
And as far as Cooper, Mudbone, he released an album in 2006 that was called Fresh Mud.
He's sticking to it, man.
He is.
Sticking to it like mud.
It's more of a blues album kind of thing. So they've both kind of gone their own ways in their own genres. But I like to think that every now and then they like call each other and they don't even say anything. They just, one goes dum dum and the other one goes dee 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 dum dum dee 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 dee. And they just do that for a few minutes and then they go, see ya, see ya.
I think that's exactly how it goes.
All my life I've been called a fool. Yeah. Uh-huh. Never graduated from no school. People said to me, boy, your life is really sad.
There's one final thing we have to talk about, and I'm only talking about it because I found a hilarious quote associated with it.
Okay, I'm really excited for this.
I can see on your face that you don't know what I'm talking about. And I'm actually really excited because I hope that you don't know this exists.
Are you going to kill me? Am I going to die?
No. I'm hoping that I get to catch a live freak out here when you find out about this if you don't know. But did you know that there was a cover of Let's Go All the Way done in the year 2000 by another group?
I feel like I read about it, but I forgot about it. Who is it?
Oh, it's somebody pretty bad.
Is it somebody that I love?
No. I mean, I hope not.
Oh, God. You'd be surprised what shit I love.
This was also a duo that relied heavily on pageantry, we'll say.
Pageantry in 2000?
And makeup. And one of them was named Violent J.
Oh, this, oh, it's Insane Clown Posse. I did read about it. Yeah. It's ICP.
Yeah. ICP covered Let's Go
Away. I actually meant to listen to that. I was like, because no, I remember reading it the
off.
Other day.
You're better off.
I remember reading about that the other day, and I was like, no.
I mean, it's sad.
And then I was going to listen to it, and then I was like, you know what? I don't want to do this to myself.
I knew about this for years because my freshman year roommate in college was a juggalo. And he played this one day, and I was minding my own business over at my desk, and he had his music on, and I go, wait a minute. And I looked over, and I was like, who is that? It's ICP. And I was like, you're fucking kidding me. I was so indignant. And he, of course, had no idea about the 80s version, so I blew his mind, too.
They were like, yeah, it's a really good song written by a very original group.
So I found, this time, the Onion's AV Club pulled through for me. I found an interview that they did with Violent J, and he talked about this cover. This is his exact...
Did he know about the song?
Yeah, this is his exact quote. Okay, so the guy is asking him about, you know, like some of these ICP songs over the years, and he brings up this cover of Let's Go All the Way, and this is exactly what Violent J said. I went and saw this girl who lived in Cleveland, and I had... I'm not doing Violent J's voice, by the way. There's
yeah,
no
don't
way,
do that.
Like, I haven't, you know...
Keep your self-respect.
Yeah. So he says, I went and saw this girl who lived in Cleveland, and I had a cassette player in my car. I just got the car, and I didn't have the chance to convert it yet to a CD player. So I stopped at a gas station, and they got one of those $1 cassette deals with a bunch of cassettes in a spinning rack. 80s Hits was one of them, so I was like, yes! So I grabbed that, was listening to it on my way back to Detroit, and Let's Go All the Way came on, and I was like, this is fucking awesome. I started picturing it, and the rest is history. So that is exactly how ICP
ended
up.
I love how he's like... I love how he's referring to anything that he has done as history. Let's take it back a notch, Violent J.
Well, at least it's not current.
Oh, I think they still do stuff, don't they?
I don't know.
There are still juggalos around. Every once in a while, if you want to like see what happens on your Twitter account, say something about a juggalo or ICP, say something negative, and you will get such weirdos in your mentions. It's really cool.
I'll pass.
If you're bored one night. Together on the same side, head lay down, we're right. Let's go all the way. Let's go all the way.
Let's go all the way. So yeah, that's kind of the legend of Sly Fox, the one album wonders. I was
going to
say they dropped us with one fabulous album, but they kind of didn't. They dropped us with like 1.5 good songs.
Also, if you want to check out Ted Currier's LinkedIn page, he has a glorious, very thin mustache.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's also, if you want to see what he's been up to, which is like stuff I already forgot, other than when he was like, oh yeah, I did Sly Fox and, you know, Atomic Dog. No big deal. He has that on his LinkedIn page, too.
We'll definitely link the Red Bull interview on the episode page for the show because it is such an interesting read. Ted Currier is a really cool dude, and I'm really sad that I did not know more about him until researching for this episode. So, Ted, you're awesome. We love you. Drop us a line if you hear this somehow, and let us know what Gary and Michael Just White Camacho are.
Yeah,
Just White Enough Camacho are up to.
Just White Enough Camacho. Yeah, we're on Twitter at Offbeat Tracks.
Yeah, and you can email us on our website, which is offbeattrackscast.com. You can listen to all our past episodes there, and you can subscribe to us on iTunes.
You should, and you should rate and review us.
Please do. We would really appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right, until next time.
I'm Danielle.
I'm Max. See ya.
See ya.